Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Amy Eddings sitting in for Brian Lehrer. 1987 marked a real turning point in gun rights in the United States. That's when Florida's legislature decided to deal with its high murder rate by ordering police chiefs to issue gun carry permits to anyone who wanted one, unless there was a good reason not to do so. Six states at that time already had so-called shall-issue laws, meaning the police shall issue a gun rather than do so at their own discretion. But Florida's initiative prompted 29 other states to follow suit. As a liberal Democrat, Dan Baum thought arming the law-abiding public to the eye teeth would turn every Main Street into a Wild West showdown over fender benders. But Baum has been a gun enthusiast since he was a kid. His decision to carry a concealed weapon and live fully what he calls the gun life is detailed in his article, Happiness is a Worn Gun, for Harper's Magazine. He's also the author of Nine Lives, Mystery, Magic, Death, and Life in New Orleans, now in paperback. And he joins us here on the Brian Lehrer Show. Hi, Dan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And we'll be taking your calls for Dan Baum. Perhaps you've read his magazine article. Listeners, are any of you gun owners? What has owning a gun done to your politics? Does carrying a concealed weapon contribute to the coarsening of society? Or is it a valid option in that most basic of human rights and responsibilities, protecting yourself from harm? Give us a call at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Dan, what got you interested in guns?
I started shooting as a five-year-old at camp. I was a fat kid. The one thing I could do was lie on my belly and shoot a .22 rifle. So I've been a gun guy my whole life. I've been a hunter my whole adult life. I collect guns. I like shooting them. But I'm also a liberal Democrat.
So yeah, I guess I should turn the question.
I have a foot in both camps.
I guess I should turn the question around and ask, as a person who fell in love with guns at age five, how did you turn out to be a liberal Democrat?
Well, I'm an odd guy. I don't think the two are mutually exclusive, and I seem to be the only one in the United States who thinks it's not mutually exclusive to be a liberal Democrat and also enjoy shooting sports. I mean, it just doesn't seem. I'll tell you the one thing I have come to understand since carrying a gun and since hanging out with people who carry guns is the nexus between conservative politics and guns, I think, is this, and that is, the people who carry guns say that if you are willing to sacrifice to the state the most fundamental function of an organism, which is self-defense, which predates the Second Amendment, it predates the Bible. Every living thing defends itself one way or the other. And if you are willing to cede that to the state, then that is the first step towards ceding to the state your responsibility for your education, your health care, your retirement, and on and on and on. So for gun people, you know, self-defense is kind of the ultimate standing on your own two feet, and it's the first step toward being the kind of self-reliant individual that conservatives want us all to be, and not thinking in terms of the collective, but thinking in terms of the individual. Now, as I say, I'm a gun guy. I got a carry permit, but, you know, that doesn't mean I sign on to the whole right-wing agenda. But I'm starting to see the connection between guns and conservative politics.
Yeah, and we'll explore that connection a bit further. Your decision to get a permit to carry a concealed weapon or a CCW was based on your desire to see what it would feel like and what the psychological experience would be like. But what's the reason most people carry guns? A fear of crime?
You know, when I took this class, and what I did was I wanted to find out more about this gun-carrying community, and so I proposed this story to Harper's, and they bought it, and that let me do something I've always wanted to do, which is kind of handle my gun all the time. If you don't have a concealed weapon permit, you know, your guns usually stay in the safe, and so I wanted to have a permit anyway, and so I went and did this, and the classes were less about teaching me how to handle myself with a gun and more about recruiting me into a culture that is animated by a fear of violent crime. And here's the funny thing. Violent crime has dropped by two-thirds since 1989. It's one of the great unambiguous success stories of the last two decades. But among people who carry guns, which is going up every year, there is this belief that, quote, crime is out of control, and they talk about it that way all the time. It's a little nuts, to tell you the truth, and it made me think that their desire to carry a gun preceded the fear of the crime, that this fear of this imagined out-of-control crime is kind of a justification for carrying the gun.
So their desire to carry a gun is more what, an expression of their self-reliance?
Well, you know, I hate to generalize about everybody. I mean, some people live in genuinely dangerous places. I mean, Otis McDonald, who filed the lawsuit that the Supreme Court just decided in Chicago, lives in a bad, and he's an old guy, lives in a bad neighborhood, and quite understandably wants a gun to protect himself. And a lot of people who get concealed permits really do want to protect themselves from crime. I mean, crime is down, but it's not non-existent. And hideous things do happen to people every day. So there's some of that. Some people, it's a political expression. For some people, it's an expression of individuality. And for some, it's just, you know, guns, if you like guns, they are satisfying to handle even if you're not shooting them. They're very well-made things. And there's a million variations of them. And they're cool. And there's just no other way to put it. And so for a lot of people, getting a carry permit is every day. You get to pick up your gun, load it, unload it, put it on your belt. And people like that. And here's the thing. As you said at the beginning, I went into this thinking that widespread concealed carry was a terrible idea. And I have looked at the data. I have looked at any number of studies. And I got to tell you, I've gotten turned around on this. And it's not just because I'm a gun guy. I'm a reporter, and I am affected by data. And the data show that there really is no public policy danger to letting law-abiding people carry guns. There has not been a massive increase in killing. There isn't a huge increase. There's no increase in the number of people killed with handguns or the percentage of people killed with handguns. There's no increase in spur-of-the-moment shootings. It's just not a public policy problem. And so I have come down on the side of, if people want to carry guns and they can pass the background check and they get trained, let them. It's just not a public policy problem.
There has not been. It's funny because the statistics seem to go against. Certainly, I'll just say it for myself. My visceral feeling that there's a lot of gunplay going on all the time here in New York City with illegal weapons, because it's very, very difficult in New York City to get a concealed CCW.
Well, you raise a good point.
But you know, people
point.
Shooting
people
one another because they're slighted, or
we'll get them.
No, but it's my point is actually that people are whipping out guns to settle disputes over girlfriends, or because they were dissed at a party and they do a drive-by at a local barbecue and they spray the crowd with bullets. Those incidents have not increased.
Your visceral sense is really not something on which to base public policy. I mean, if we're going to, you know, the fact is that the people who whip guns out, 80% of the people who shoot other people have a prior criminal record, so they would be excluded from getting a carry permit. Now, this comes to the point that there are 250 million privately owned guns in the United States, and unless we're going to go door to door and round them all up, which I don't think we're going to do, there's really no way to keep bad people from getting guns. So the question is, what about the good people? And the people who are committed to concealed carry and to widespread gun ownership say there's really no way to keep guns out of the hands of bad guys, so let the good guys have guns to protect themselves.
And
as I say, there is really no evidence that that has been a public policy problem.
I'm speaking with Dan Baum. He's the author of Happiness is a Worn Gun, My Concealed Weapon and Me. It's the August cover story in Harper's Magazine. I'm Amy Edding, sitting in for Brian Lehrer, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, or post a comment on the Brian Lehrer Show page on WNYC.org. Thomas from Rockland County, you're on WNYC.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm following this discussion with great interest. I am a gun owner. I have held a concealed carry permit for the last 3 years. By the way, I haven't heard it mentioned, but basically all handgun permits in New York State are concealed carry. I find it to be a tremendous responsibility. I'm a lifelong liberal and proud of it. I think that this is really something that should be considered more of a liberal issue. I think there's a lot of fear and a lot of mistrust, but just from my own experience, I can say that I was very fully investigated before I was able to get this permit. And I take it as a trust that was given to me. It's not a toy. It's not something to play with. It's not something to show to your friends in the bar. It's a responsibility. It's for your self-protection and for the protection of those that are nearest and dearest to you.
Thomas, did you take a class like Dan Baum did?
It's required. But I have to agree with Dan. There was that more of a sense of inculcating me into the gun culture than there was actual, say, marksmanship, safe handling, that sort of thing.
Thomas, thank you for your call. Dan, describe a little bit more, because I found that was one of the more hair-raising aspects of your article. Tell me a little bit more about this class that you took and what was being taught there rather than how to defend yourself against somebody with your gun.
Well, I took two, and one of them, believe it or not, was a three-hour quickie at a gun show. You know, go into this room, the little three-hour class, most of which was a recruiting pitch for the NRA and a lot of paranoid fantasies about home invasion, which is a very rare event. And, you know, here's your certificate. Go. Get a permit. It was terrifying. The other course I took was over four nights, a couple hours a night, and it was a lot of kind of macho posturing. There was a lot of Obama jokes. There was a lot of NRA recruitment talk, but really very little about the physical skills of defending yourself with a gun or the law. And at one point, the cop who was teaching the legal part, you know, encouraged us to lie to police if we're stopped while we're wearing our gun, encouraged us to actually engage in kind of illegal shooting if we can get our story straight before the cops get there. I mean, it was really stupid. And one of the things that I'm, you know, kind of agitating for now is if we're going to let people carry guns, and as I say, I don't think it's a bad idea, training has got to be a lot better. And to their credit, most gun guys I talk to agree that training needs to be better, though they get twitchy at the idea of government mandates. Mm-hmm. But you know, it is possible to be well-trained, and anybody who's going to carry a gun ought to be well-trained.
Darian from Brooklyn, you're on WNYC.
Hi, how's it going?
Great.
I'm just really concerned with this, or interested in, I guess, in this mentality of, like, concern over ceding responsibility to the government. I mean, we've already ceded responsibility to the government for so many things like, you know, education, sewers, roads. I would never want to have to defend myself. I'm happy to cede that responsibility to the government. And I just wonder where that kind of mentality comes from. And I also wanted to address something that came up as you were discussing, and kind of concerning me, the fatalism of it, the idea that people who want guns can just get them if they're going to commit a crime with them. I mean, someone makes a gun, someone sells a gun. If you reduce the sale and production of guns, there's going to be less guns, or they're going to be more expensive for the bad guys to get them. And I think we have to get over this fatalism that no matter what, someone who wants to commit a crime can get a gun, because I just don't think that's true.
Darian, thank you for that call. So two questions there for you, Dan Baum. Address this. I mean, it occurs to me that there's other ways to defend yourself, that most basic of human rights, beyond carrying a gun. You can take a self-defense class. But you write in your article about these levels of readiness that is talked about in gun training classes. And what's your argument for carrying a gun versus, say, taking a Taekwondo class?
Yeah, I'm not arguing against taking a Taekwondo class. And I'm not really arguing that everybody should go out and get a gun either. What I'm arguing is we should all be a little bit less hysterical at the fact that there are law-abiding people carrying guns. I guess that's all I'm pushing for here. But this, one of the things that the gun people talk about in the classes and in the books about concealed carry is conditions of readiness. And there is a powerful desire among people in the gun community that we all, armed or not, be at what they call condition yellow. Condition white is when you're just not paying attention at all. You're talking on the phone while you're walking down the street. You're listening to an iPod while you're texting. You're not aware of what's going on around you. Condition yellow is kind of the condition we're supposed to be in when we're driving. You know, our eyes are moving. We're paying attention to everything around us. And in a way, this movement to get people to carry guns is almost a condition yellow movement that there is a lot of resentment that you pick up in the books about carrying guns and in the classes against the kind of person who would be in condition white. When you're in condition white, you're a sheep, and you're not taking care of yourself, and you're not taking care of the people around you. And the gun-carrying people are kind of like they resent these kind of airy-fairy people who would live in condition white and expect everybody to take care of them. They want everybody kind of like a sheepdog, is what they say, aware, ready to do battle, you know, not aggressive, but ready to participate in the defense of society. And again, the carrying of the gun goes way beyond the instrument that you strap on your hip. It's this mentality and this mindset that the gun community wants us all in. And I got to say, in their defense, really, it's not unreasonable to expect grown-ups to be aware of their surrounding when they're walking down the street. And it's not unreasonable to expect grown-ups to be prepared to defend themselves. I mean, expecting the police to be there if you are attacked is wacky. I mean, that's just not going to happen.
Let's take
another
call
and investigate later. But, you know, in a way, really, the gun people are right. You should not be ceding to the state your responsibility to defend yourself, because the state won't be there if something bad happens.
I'm talking with Dan Baum. He's the author of Happiness is a Worn Gun in Harper's Magazine this month. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Mike from Nassau, you're on WNYC.
Yes, good morning. I have no particular objection to the theories of happiness is a worn gun, but what I'm concerned about, I teach at a College of Criminal Justice, and I also happen to own an Israeli self-defense school, and so I'm sensitive to this issue, and what concerns me is not that people might carry guns, although I think that's a dangerous slippery slope. It's that people, the good guys, as Mr. Baum is pointing out, the good guys that carry guns as some sort of deterrent or potential retaliation against the bad guys that are carrying guns. The problem becomes when you draw a gun to defend yourself against a bad guy that carries a gun, and when gunfire erupts, there are other people involved. And there's no amount of training that you can undergo unless you're in special forces where you can prevent innocent bystanders from being shot, property from being damaged, escalation of gun battles. Everyone's carrying guns, and you hear gunshots, and all of a sudden, there's more gunshots. So I'm going to leave the question out there for the expert, but my concern is less the idea of carrying a gun than the fact that if you deploy the gun against the so-called bad guys, you create a scenario in which quite a bit more is going to happen than simple one-for-one bullet exchanges. Thank you for your time.
Mike, thanks for your call. Dan, does he have a point that perhaps we should be thinking of the greater public good rather than self-defense when making a decision to carry a concealed weapon?
He does, but the concealed carry revolution started 20 years ago, so we have a track record to look at. And what he's talking about has not been a big problem. Most of the time, I mean, the vast majority of time that people use firearms to defend themselves, no shots are fired. They say, I have a gun, and the guy runs away, or they brandish the gun, and the guy runs away, and it's not reported to the police. There were two academics who argued for years about the extent of defensive gun use by law-abiding people. One said it happened 1.5 million times a year. And the other said, no, it only happens 80,000 times a year. And they kind of both lost sight of the fact that even 80,000, even the smaller number, is a huge number. It's more than double the number of people who are killed with guns every year. It happens a lot that people defend themselves with guns, with no shots being fired. So while your caller is right, if law-abiding people are whipping out their guns and firing their gun in defense of themselves, yeah, bullets are going everywhere, bystanders are at risk, he's absolutely right. But that is a relatively small percentage of the defensive gun uses in the United States.
Dan, I want to ask you one last question. Does carrying a gun make you feel different?
Very different. And it doesn't necessarily make me feel safer. And I'm probably going to stop carrying it. Most people who get concealed weapon permits carry it for a few months and then look at it one day and say, well, this is nuts. What am I carrying this big, heavy thing around for? I'm not really in any danger. It doesn't necessarily make me feel safer because I'm not well enough trained. If I were going to go and really put in the time and the money to get properly trained, it might make me feel safer. Right now, it doesn't really make me feel safer, but I can tell you when I'm wearing the gun, I'm always aware of it. And so I am just very tuned into my surroundings. And that I kind of enjoy. I still like condition white. I still like being kind of in a daydream land sometimes when that's appropriate. But when I'm on a city street and I've got my gun, I'm much more tuned into what's going on around me, and I like that. And I could probably develop that without the gun, but it certainly has changed how I feel when I walk around.
Dan Baum, self-described liberal Democrat and gun owner, speaking with us here on The Brian Lehrer Show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up, we talk with Daniel Ellsberg, the man behind the Pentagon Papers, about what he thinks of the WikiLeaks leaks. Stay tuned.